Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Aaron Lim, the co-founder and CEO of Prevere. Aaron is a serial entrepreneur with a background in electrical engineering and computer science from UC Berkeley. He previously held key roles at GIC and BlackRock and has founded three successful startups. At Prevere, Aaron is revolutionizing lead management for sales professionals worldwide. His mobile CRM platform seamlessly integrates with popular chat apps, helping businesses convert leads into clients effortlessly. I've asked Aaron to join us here today to share his journey from Berkeley to leading a global tech startup and offer his insights on entrepreneurship and innovative business solutions. So Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Daryl. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and it's good to have you here. Now, one of the things I always like to ask is, how did you even get into this, like business and marketing and sales? Is this something your parents were into? Was your dad at the dinner table being like, Aaron, send me this pen? Is that the environment you grew up in?
No, not at all. Honestly, up until I was about to graduate from college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to be an archaeologist. I love Jurassic Park and like trying to hunt for bones in my backyard. So I got into computer science, startups, business in general, extremely late. I didn't do any internships in college. I was just focused on enjoying school, playing hockey, doing kid things. But I completely got into it by accident when I started doing more courses, and colleagues would have families with businesses that needed some tech stuff. Some of the video games that I played and was active in asked for help in building up their website and managing their servers. And I got pulled into that accidentally. And because I was in Silicon Valley, I started making apps on Facebook when they first came out. And then that got attention of companies. So it was by complete accident. But once I got in, I loved it. I was like, wow, you can do this for a living. People make money from just building stuff and doing things that they enjoy. Love so that. Completely by accident, late to the game, but I loved it since then.
So you came in as a builder then. I hear that you either got to build or be, you either have to be able to build or sell and ideally do both. Is that so? It sounds like you came in as a builder. What were some of the first things you built?
So the first thing that I built was a super simple app on Facebook. I was in college, so and this was in the US. So like the Greek scene, the sororities, fraternities was super strong. So it was just a simple way for you to put your fraternity or sorority logo on your Facebook profile. That's when they allowed that. And then anyone could just view it and click and then add that to their profile and then change the picture if they wanted. So that's what was like the first big thing that got used widely by a couple hundred thousand people. That got the attention of startups that then came out to recruit. But yeah, that was the first time that it's like, whoa, I built something. And through Facebook, it actually got distributed. And it wasn't just for like me and my friend and my mom.
I love that. I love that. I love that. So what was the next one then? Because we hear there were three previous startups, I think.
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. So that was just like a side project that took a couple hours in college. So that wasn't even like a startup to me.
Right.
The first like real startup that I joined and helped to start was called Ondigo. And then it pivoted to App Central. And that was still in Silicon Valley. That was when I was, I think, my junior, end of my junior year. And the CEO came and found my friend and I to help start it. So we were like the first engineers to join, first employees. We started as a way to deploy apps across any mobile device. So just for context, this was 2007.
Right.
So there wasn't an iPhone yet.
Right.
Android didn't exist yet. People couldn't just create and deploy apps anywhere. If you remember back then on your Nokias, you had to go and download jar files, and to download an app like Snake, you had to scroll through like dozens of different phone models to click on this specific file that's
right
for you. So we started with that, got some good early traction. But then what happened is iPhone came out and Android came out, and we're like, it doesn't seem like it would be a huge problem going forward. Like that problem was getting solved in a different way. So what we pivoted to was the world's first enterprise app store for businesses to deploy applications to their employees so people can bring their personal phones while keeping their personal data private, but the company data is still controlled by the company. So it allowed people to put their work apps on their phone while maintaining personal privacy.
Yeah, I love that. That's a real need. That sounds really powerful. What were some of the early challenges that you faced in the startup arena? Obviously, you've got to get proof of concept. You've got to get your minimum viable customers, members, whatever it is you're doing. What for you do you feel were some of your biggest hurdles that you've had to face?
So for the first startup, maybe I'll go through first, second, third, if that's okay.
Sure.
And the journey there. So for the first startup, I was lucky. At the time, I thought I was lucky to have been shielded by a lot of the customer selling part. We had a great CEO that was just fantastic at sales. So as director of engineering, all I had to do was just build. I just had to build
right.
whatever we needed to build, whatever the customers asked. And that was super easy. And then, yeah, that was super easy. That was super great. I was like, yes, I don't need to get involved in business and sales. And I thought that I enjoyed that. But by the time that I did my second startup, I realized that, okay, I was missing a lot on this. I just went in, oh, let's build it. Customers will come.
Right.
Someone, if it's great, people will like it, because I never had to struggle with that. Someone else right. was struggling that wasn't too plugged into that in my first startup. So that took a lot longer to get any sort of traction. And now on my third startup, there was a real big focus on, we know we can build it. Whatever it is, we know we can build it, but we need to make sure that people want it, that people will pay for it very early on. People were paying for it before we had even actually built the thing. So it was like a complete mindset shift that I think could have been avoided a lot if I would have perhaps paid a bit more attention and got my fingers into more areas of the business in the first time. But yeah, that's the journey. Took longer, but finally we got there.
I think that's so powerful, because followers of my show know that I've done this a few times, that Elon Musk made $300 million selling a car he had no factory to build and no team to help him make. Just $300 million. So what's your excuse? So I just love that you said you wanted to make sure people would want it and would pay for it, and that you had people paying for it before it was launched. Before what? Before you still had the minimum. Talk me through this. Let's go.
Yeah, it was literally, and we initially weren't even trying to get people to pay. We were just so embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
It was literally just an HTML page, right? There was right. a server serving a static HTML page, no backend that was rendering it or generating anything dynamic. And this was for real estate agents to actually sell their properties better, but have a really nice listing that's personalized with their branding, et cetera, and personalized for the client. And I forwarded it to a couple of friends to see, hey, give me some feedback on this. And one of them forwarded it to some people at Seville's, who then got in touch with me. So that was a stranger, but it was 2 degrees away. And they said, hey, this is really interesting. How do I get access? I said, yeah, just use it for free. And then she said, if we pay you 10 bucks, can we get access? I was like, I was good with free. And yeah. this was like literally 2 weeks after we just even came up yeah. with the idea.
Yeah.
So like we wanted to monetize early on, but not
yeah.
eventually not that early. And yeah, she said, we give you 10 bucks. I'm like, sure, I was fine with free, but 10 bucks works too.
Yeah.
And fast forward a week later, she had a team of 60 that was on board. Literally random people were transferring money into my bank account, and I would have no idea who these people were. And we didn't have a company registered. We didn't have a website, anything like that. But that's when we knew that there was something there.
Yeah.
And it was getting pulled out of our hands. We didn't even have to sell it. People were just like, give me, here's money.
Yeah, I love that. So were you focused? How did you identify the problem to solve? What gave you the, like, how did you come up with what? Because you said you wanted to make sure people would pay, wanted it. How did you even throw a dart at the, you just covered your eyes and was like, I'm going to build something that does this. Is that what you did? Or you, it sounds like you had something a little bit more strategic than that. I don't know. I might be wrong.
Yes, yes. So it did take a couple of weeks of like really focused full-time effort on it. But if we zoom out a little bit, it was probably years in the making. I tried to be a lot more scientific about it at first, but then I realized nothing beats talking to customers.
Right.
So just as a bit of background, so we work in the CRM space, client relationship management, building tools for salespeople. And I had spent many years at BlackRock, leading their Asia Pacific CRM efforts, at GIC, leading that globally. And at the corporates, I spent a lot of time with the sales teams, investment teams, our users, and I felt that we had a really good grasp of what needed to be built. But what the salesperson wants and what management wants is always in conflict. Salesperson just wants to be more productive, do things easier, save time. Management wants reporting and analytics and right. oversight. And data and all those things, which require the salespeople to input a lot of their calls and messages and meetings and notes and things right. like that. So when I started, and I went through this program called Entrepreneur First, where you go in, it's like Hunger Games for startups, where individual founders go in, they have some background, they have some ideas, but you're supposed to find a co-founder, create something that works in 3 months, and then take it up from there. When I first started the program, and that's when I went into this full time, I thought that I wanted to do an AI tool that would automatically populate Salesforce and whatever corporate CRMs that people had, so that the salespeople had less things to do, right? Record your calls, there'll be a device in a meeting room to just listen to everything, collate everything, and put it into the company system. So we tried that for a couple of weeks, talking to banks and corporates, the environments that I used to operate in. But there was a big issue in terms of the buyer was still the corporate, the manager, and the employee still was resistant to it. And the thing that really pushed us off that path was I was talking to a banker, and they said, they interrupted me mid-pitch, and they said, "Look, man, you're trying to make it easier for me to do something I don't want to do. You're trying to make it easier for me to do something I don't want to do. I don't want to log every meeting into Salesforce so my boss can come breathe down my neck. I don't want all my clients exposed to the company and like their status and everything. Someone else is going to go and poach them if I leave. These are my clients. I do things. Stop trying to fix things that I don't want to do. Make it easier for me to do things that I do and I want to do. Build it for me and I will pay you." And that's where we saw a big shift mentally in terms of separating the buyer from the user and saying, hey, there is an opportunity to build something and the user is the one that buys, right? Because if those things are aligned, then the conversations become easier, right? When we would talk to the bosses, the managers, the C-suite, they would say, "Yeah, I can see how this saves my employees time, but that's what I pay them to do."
Right.
That's
right.
their job. Why I'm already spending money for them to do it. Why should I spend more money to make their lives easier? There was that attitude of the buyer versus the user. But that's really what that one quote was, what got us started down. Okay, how do we align buyer and user? And then when we talked to more people, that's where we started to see moving away from enterprise, where the buyer is almost never the user, into a more B2C market, sales market. That's where we see that it aligns a lot more, because you have a small business owner, like a wedding planner or a real estate agent or someone doing automotive sales or direct sales. They may be part of a larger company, but they're generally in control of the things that they do and the apps that they use. And,
right.
and they really value the personal productivity. So that's what really shifted us towards there.
You became their secret weapon, the assistant their boss doesn't know that they have, so they look
exactly
better. Yeah, on team meetings. I love that. For the people that are listening that are like, that sounds great, but they don't know where to start, how did you go? You talked about this banker interrupted you. How did you pound the pavement and have those meetings and give those pitches for a product you didn't even have?
Yeah, so I first started, of course, with network. So I spent a lot of time in corporate. So I just reached out to all my corporate contacts, basically anyone that was in a relevant field that I could talk to. So in Singapore, we have mandatory military service that we have to do for 2 years. And then for 10 years after, for 1 or 2 weeks a year, 10 years after that. So I just reached out to people in the military network, basically anyone that I could speak to. And then I asked them to, hey, do you know any other business owners? Do you know any other people in these specific industries? So mostly just asking for referrals. If you can't get anyone interested within a referral network, then how are you going to go and sell it to the world? So we started with that. And then we took every opportunity when someone said, oh, I have a team, I have someone else that, and sometimes we would ask as well, is anyone else having these problems? But yeah, really just asking.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Because that's something I actually, one of my best performing email newsletters is the 7-step fast cash plan, where we talk about identify a hot market, 100 people who have a problem you think you can solve, think in stereotype, find or create a product or service, and then create a multi-step promotion explaining it and its benefits, and then reach out to 100 contacts, either one-on-one, real-time social media chat, or face-to-face, and you're asking, would you or anyone be interested in X? Would you or anyone need help with this problem? And then analyze results. And if results are good, keep going. If not, back to the drawing board. Is that a fair summary, you think, of the process of what you did?
Yeah, for sure. I would say I shortcut that a little bit, or maybe
Sure.
I completely agree, and that's what I would recommend as well. But I think what happened was when I started with network, the response was so strong that we never even got to that step. Like typically we would create just a landing page. It doesn't take more than a day, right? To create a landing page, collect some emails, reach out to people, put together a sequence. But this was so early on. And what we realized was, or what I realized was, in my second startup, I was trying to prove the idea, right? I'd spent years trying to show the world how genius and awesome this idea and product was, and look at all these features. And this second time, the third time was the focus was on how do I prove this idea wrong as quickly as possible? I was a very different stage in life. I married, had kid, mortgage, etc. And I didn't want to waste time on something that people didn't want. Right. So it was a lot less about, hey, here's this idea. Isn't it great? And it's more of, do you have this problem? How are you solving it today? Would you pay for something? Tell me all the things that you've done to try and solve this. Do you know other people with this problem? If it worked this way and I didn't sell like the dream, I sold like the crappy version one concept of it. Again, we hadn't built anything. And the idea is if people are still excited about the crappy version one concept, then there's going to be a good demand for it, right? They don't need the whole perfect thing. They're like, give me anything and I will give you money. Yeah. So it was really around like trying to prove it wrong. So like we hadn't even gotten to come up with the idea fully before talking to people. So then we never got to like the more mature stages of like outreach, et cetera.
Right. I love that.
But I guess once you hit it, it's just that obvious.
And you built self-serving in the beginning. Can you speak to that in a little bit? Because I think for a lot of people, I think that's almost the dream, right? To have customers come and they sell themselves, they buy themselves, they put in their info themselves. They come like, how do you approach that when you don't have someone face-to-face there? And obviously you can, I'll start with that. I got some follow-up questions, but.
Sure. I guess this ties back to the early stage where first startup, I wasn't involved in the sales at all, other than from a technical perspective when a customer wanted to go a lot deeper. And then we'd have those conversations, but I never really had to sell, right? People were already interested and almost committed by the time that I would talk to them. And then I saw how hard it was in the second startup. So the priority for the current one was, how do I do this without selling? Because I didn't want to go out. I love talking to people and like finding out the problems that they have and how we can solve it and getting feedback and things like that. Of course, like every business owner should always be talking to the customers all the time. But I didn't want to be in a situation where to get a sale, to make money, I had to talk to every single person. Right. And another aspect of it was just the nature of our business. We operate at a very low price point, 20, 30, 50 bucks a month.
Right.
And at that scale, it just doesn't justify. It just doesn't justify a sales process. So after about a year of trying out various things, would this work, industry specific, different concepts within the area that we had decided on, we said, all right, we want to go global. We didn't think that this was something that was specific to Singapore, which is where we are and headquartered. We know that we want to be global. The best way to go global is to have it self-serve, especially at our price point. How do we go about doing that? And then self-serve to us was all about, can someone get onboarded and get to that aha moment within 5 minutes on their own without a lot of context about it? So people had to come in with a very specific problem that we solved. It couldn't be, and they had to know that we solved it in 5 minutes. Right. They're not going to pour months populating some random CRM in hopes of some payoff 2 years down the road. They had to see the value up front, and it needs to be something that just resonates with them when we say, you have this problem. They say, yes, solve it for me.
So is this a free trial and then 5 minutes they're wowed and now they're going to subscribe to unlock all features? Is that kind of how your approach?
Yeah, so we started with a free trial, 14-day free trial. During the free trial, it had all features unlocked, so people can just use it. We didn't feel that it was necessary because I'm in the market that we operate in, individual sales professionals, marketers, small businesses, people want to feel it. People want it to be proven. Everyone's promising some grand solution to all of their problems, but actually using it, actually experiencing it is the proof. So we didn't want to paywall that part, because we were confident that we actually solve the problem. You pay when we've proven it. We pay when you see value. You don't pay to see if we solve it for you. Which so that was powerful. Our approach for it.
Yeah, results in advance. Your marketing strategy was let's get you some results in advance.
Yeah.
And then you'll sign up to pay for it because we've proven it to you.
Yeah. And we had people that even though there was 14-day free trial, within 10 minutes of signing up, they're like, yep, this solves it. Put in their credit card. They didn't need to think further than that.
I love that. So let's walk me through some of the growing pains. So what? It was just you had this thing. There was proof of concept. You did a 14-day free trial. Then people signed up their credit cards and the skies parted and golden rain showered down and your bank accounts filled up and people are praising you. Is that kind of it? And you're loved everywhere you go. Is that how the story continues from here?
A little bit. If we cut back about 30%, there are definitely a lot of struggles on the way. Even getting to that first self-serve point took a lot of trial and error and understanding of the customers to get to there. Because when we were doing in-person, and it wasn't like one-on-one sales, but we're doing trainings for maybe 100 real estate agents at a time, and they would ask us to do these things. We realized that from the training to the adoption side, or like training to usage and then subscription, there was a big drop-off.
Right.
In the training, people would be really interested, like, oh, wow, one app on my phone and I can WhatsApp and I can text and I don't need to type in copy and paste. I can even track when people view. They got really excited about it. But then after the training, when we just let them go off and use it, many of these people didn't use it. It was the number one priority in their lives. And what we realized was what we shared in the training was a bit too broad. It was too future focused, which is great for a training, but we were missing a stage in terms of when someone actually downloads the app, what are they supposed to do in the first 10 minutes? That's going
to
get
the actual, like almost in copywriting, when you're supposed to explain how to buy, what will happen when you buy and what to do after you buy.
Exactly.
So you really had to walk them through that part, the onboarding.
Exactly. So there's the onboarding, but the way that we approached it was instead of changing the onboarding, technically we changed the people who we onboarded. So one of my favorite frameworks that I always suggest to people trying to do self-serve, because we're venture backed in and our investors mostly have like B2B companies that are very like enterprise 6-figure, 7-figure deals. And a number of them have said, oh, I want a self-serve product. How do we get started with that? And what I've said is in self-serve, you don't have the luxury of sitting down with every customer and tailoring and explaining and onboarding to their needs. So you can try to cover everything. And of course, if you have sufficient time and if you're very good at that, there's examples of that, right? Notion does it, Airtable, a lot of these more general apps that can be customized in specific ways can do it. But if you just want to get started, if you want to take your first few steps into self-serve, what I always suggest is just narrow down your ICP, your ideal customer profile, so narrowly that anyone within that would have such a high chance of seeing that aha moment in 5 minutes that, yeah, it would just be super easy for them. So we started with an initial segment of all small business owners and salespeople and marketers that interact with clients through WhatsApp, which is huge. And investors love seeing, oh, there's, you know, hundreds of millions of these types of people in the world. We're going to serve everyone. This is great. But they all operate in different ways. And what's valuable to the wedding planner and the real estate agent and the magician doing kids' birthday parties are all very different. The broader scheme, it's similar, but day-to-day is very different. So the framework that I came up with is describe your ideal customer profile. And you imagine that you have 100 people in a room that are in that customer profile. You now have 1 minute to pitch them. How many of those people after 1 minute are so convinced they say, here's my money. The bar is, here's my money. The bar is not, oh, I'm interested. Let's chat again. Because you need to self-serve. There's no chat again. So that 1 minute is like watching an ad or seeing a landing page. But how many of those people? And when we look at it, it's, okay, out of all the small business owners out there that are using text and WhatsApp, are we really, how many can I convince in 1 minute? To buy, not even to try. And that was like maybe 5 or 10%. And the idea is, how do we narrow this down? Instead of trying to convince the 100 people, instead of trying to say, oh, I need 20 minutes or I need 3 days to convince them.
Right.
You don't have that in self-serve.
Right.
It's how do I change who's in the room? How do I narrow it down even further? So then it's like these layers of, okay, if it's small business owners that are, yeah, let's say if it's small business owners, maybe I have 5% chance of converting someone in a 1 minute pitch. But if I say small business owners that are interacting with leads and clients through WhatsApp, text message, et cetera, and primarily work off their phone, then that becomes, let's say, 10%. And then if we then keep layering on, then the goal was to get to an 80% conversion rate, at least theoretically. Who needs to be in the room? What problems do they have? It can be as specific as you want for us to get to an 80% conversion rate. So what we came up with is small business owner or individual salesperson works off their phone, interacts with customers through WhatsApp, iMessage, text, phone calls, like all these mobile channels. We added on running Facebook lead ads, a very specific type of ad on Facebook, is currently downloading those leads from Facebook through CSV multiple times a day. So it's down to what they're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. And after they download their leads, they would add them to their phone book and send a text or a WhatsApp. And if someone has that specific problem, it's very specific. It's like ludicrously specific. But if someone has that specific problem, we know the exact onboarding flow to get them to that aha moment, not just in the first 5 minutes, multiple times a day after that. And that's what unlocked the self-serve part for us. It was really just narrowing down and going so specific. We can always broaden out later, but going really pinpoint.
I love that. I love that so much. There are riches and niches, bitches. And that is such a niche. That is, I only work with blonde-haired, left-handed tennis players with one leg and their feet shoe size is over that. Like, it's so specific. And I love that, what'd you call it? The model, the framework, that was it. Mm. You've got 1 minute to convince a room of 100 people and that's it. That's your shoot your shot and you're out. So it has to be so specific to them and the immediate problem that they have. And that was something that I heard, I forget who told me this, but they were saying, Daryl, you're looking for the second time the car doesn't start. And I said, what do you mean? And I go, first time you get in your car and you turn the key and the engine doesn't go on, you go, oh, something's wrong with my car. And you pump the gas, pump the brake, you jiggle things, and then you turn and then it goes and you're like, oh, okay, good. But the second time that happens, they go, uh-oh, I think I might have a problem. Yep. And if you show them the ad and your ad is about fixing car start problems at that moment, and that's your second time the car didn't start. They're downloading these leads from Facebook ads leads, and they've got to mainly text these people and they're opening up spreadsheet and and you're like, that's the second time. They did it one time. Man, this works, but man, it sucks. And the second time they do that, your ad is there. Hey, would you like to automate this? Okay. Boom, 5 minutes. Wow, I need this. Here you go, paid. I'm off to the races. So how did you narrow it down to that specific? I feel like you did 100+ customer interviews, so much iterations. Did you eventually have someone that was like your ideal client? How did you get... I love how specific that is. I feel like you're trying to talk to all people named Jerry that are 5'5", that favorite color is purple, and they also play whatever, World of Warcraft. Like, it's just, how'd you get down to that?
Yeah, like, it had to be very specific, at least for that thing. Obviously, we broadened out since then. But this was another thing that kind of happened by accident. We knew the area that we needed to improve on, which was like the whole onboarding process. And we spend a lot of times with our customers because they love the concept of, oh, here's an app that just manages all my leads and all my clients.
Right. But it wasn't enough to get them to pay.
Yes. But like getting started, because like let's say you download this app, and even if it's Excel, it's, what do you want me to do with it? Do you want me to import my whole phone book? Do you want me to like manually add people? Do you want me to set follow-ups? Do you want me to add notes? There's so many things to do. And there wasn't like a single starting point. And a very common question that came up was, even though we were providing like lead management CRM services through the app, almost everyone asks us for lead generation, right? Small businesses, salespeople, they always want leads. And so, guys, do you do lead generation? I need leads. I need leads. And at the first point, we just said, oh, sorry, we don't do that. Until today, we don't do lead generation, right? Because we feel that's a conflict of interest. If we're managing all your leads, but we also sell leads to you, then that's an issue. Yeah. So that was a hard line. But then when we dug into it a little bit further, we uncovered the problem, which is, but if I don't have leads, then I don't need a system to manage leads.
Right. Where are people getting leads?
Exactly. So then I asked that exact question. Okay, we can't give you leads, but where do you get leads from? And these are people, like hundreds of people that had been our customers paying us, we'd been interacting with for months at this time. And we kept trying to find that big burning problem to solve. And they're like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. It's okay. I manage. Copy and pasting isn't that hard. And when we asked that one question, oh, but where do you get your leads from? They would say Facebook and Google and their website and property portals and referrals, etc. When we went a little bit deeper and said, show me how you get the lead from Facebook to your phone. Show me how you get the lead from your website to your phone. And just asking that one layer down, people just started ranting. People would rant for an hour straight and be like, oh my God, this, let me show you, this is the most terrible thing. And like when someone gets that excited, you need to like just really latch on.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're like, oh, do you have any
pain,
problem?
There'll be payment.
Exactly. Right. But we really needed to get that specific because for weeks we had been saying, oh, do you have any problems contacting your leads? No, it's fine. Oh, where do you get your leads from? Oh, from Facebook, from Google. Okay. But then when we said, show me how you get your lead from Facebook to your phone, for some reason that just unlocks just a whole hour of ranting and complaining of, let me show you how stupid this is. Facebook doesn't give us alerts. So I don't even know that I have a lead. And every day I see that I spent all this money and Facebook says, oh, you have four leads, but I don't know where the four leads are. So I have to go into this stupid thing. I have to go to each page. I need to click this thing. And they just rant. And I just let them rant. I'm like, tell me how, what have you tried to solve this? What do you do? What have you searched for? What do your friends do? How long have you had this problem, etc. And once we found that, that's what really got us to, okay, if you're running a Facebook ad, you don't get alerts, or a Facebook lead ad specifically. You don't get alerts. You don't even know when the lead is coming in. That's one pain point. So then you have to check 5 times a day, and then you have to download a CSV. Another pain point. If you're running 10 ads, 10 CSVs, and then you have to manually add those to your phone book, and then you need to wait for it to sync over to WhatsApp, blah, blah, blah. So what really changed was us, instead of asking the high-level questions, asking them to show me how you do it. How do you do this today? They may not even think that it's a problem. Right. We had other people that we asked, they gave the exact same process, but they complained a lot less. They were just like, no, this is how it's done.
Right.
But it all unlocked when we said, show me how you solve this. Show me what you do. And that gave us way more insight than months and months of talking at the high level, conceptual level.
I love that. I love that. I love that. I love it so much. Great, great. People listening to this may want to listen to this a couple of times. I've got pages of notes. I know we're running out of time fast, but I do want to ask about running a SaaS business, tech stacks, developers, juggling it all. What would you recommend to someone who's starting out and struggling, or they feel like they've got an idea for an app or something? And how do you enter into that, knowing that your coders are coding, that the code is good, protecting your code, all that sort of stuff? How do people, because I feel like since the pandemic, especially more, even if you're a dry cleaner, there's probably a feeling that you need an app. For these people that are wandering into this as someone who's got so much experience, are there any, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see entrepreneurs and maybe other businesses making when it comes to the tech side of having a code-based business?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. I will start on the most common thing that I see, which is typically non-technical founders or business owners wanting to create a technical product. And usually what I hear is, oh, I just need someone to build this. Everyone thinks, and for myself as well, previously, I thought, oh, this is such an amazing idea. I just need to build it and then it'll work. But the reality is your customers very likely do not care about the app at all. They just want to get it done. If you're a dry cleaning service, the job that you're being hired to do is to dry clean the clothes, right? It's not an app. You may think that an app is helping you and maybe, oh, then people, you don't need to talk to them and blah, blah, blah. But the customers don't care so much about it. So a lot of things can be prototyped out very easily. My motto is, if it takes you more than 2 days to prototype, it's way too long. Again, even if you're non-technical, right? If you're saying you want a dry cleaning, if you run a dry cleaning business and you want an app where people can book it themselves, right? Why can't you just set up a WhatsApp channel
right.
where people can just WhatsApp you, right? It's not fancy. You're not going to raise money on just that alone.
Right.
But it gets people. It's probably good enough for a year. Right. And that's what we did as well. Just do it as manual as you can until you know exactly what you want. If you don't have people using the manual version of the app already, then you shouldn't go out and build it. If it's, especially if it's like a more of an offline problem like
right.
that.
Right.
So, because the issue is if you don't know it and if you don't know that specific solution and how your customers are already using it, what they say that they want and how they actually use it are always different.
Yes. Yes.
So if you're going in blind there and then you're talking to potentially an outsourced agency or whatever, who's also just as blind to it, you're just going to spend so much time and effort to do right. that. But it's a lot easier to go to someone and say, here's, especially if you're outsourcing, but even if you get like a technical co-founder or a partner or some developers in-house, it's a lot easier to go to them and say, here's the process that I have. Here's this stupid Excel sheet and these WhatsApp chats. And here's what I do on a daily basis. Make this better. That's a lot easier to do and to code than to have this back of the napkin. Hey, here's, we're going to have this all-in-one app for anyone to book the dry cleaning services and blah, 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 blah. Just like the communication becomes a lot clearer. The requirements become a lot clearer. There's a little bit more flexibility in terms of how this is done. People can iterate very quickly on it, build faster.
I love that.
Yeah. I would say it's just like communicating what actually needs to be done beyond the concept, because that's where most of the technical development will actually fail, at least in the early stages of building the wrong thing.
So it sounds like iterate your minimum viable product over and over. What's the minimum I need to produce the result they want? And then what's the minimum I need to improve on that for the biggest issue they have with what we've built? What's the minimum? And just keep iterating on that until you've got something before you decide to go build a whole Taj Mahal. I think that's, I love that. I love that.
Exactly.
I love that.
And the minimum is a lot more minimum than you think.
Yeah. Like
again, two days for a non-technical person, you can do it on PowerPoint. You can do it on WhatsApp. You can do it by just drawing. There's so many tools out there to do this nowadays.
Right.
And one thing is, if you're in a more traditional business, if your core business is not like selling the application, if it's just like an add-on service or platform that your customers can use, it may be that you never get to building the app because one of these hacks in the middle and that iterates a couple of times and that's good enough. Maybe you love the Excel plus WhatsApp solution for it.
Right.
Plus Google Forms. Why not?
Why not? Why not? What else? You said there were two ways you're going to talk about it. What's the other way?
Okay. So that is getting up until deciding on what exactly would it be? What are the features, et cetera. After that, again, I would say even in development, people get way too carried away with building in all the bells and whistles, and that just makes it go on forever and makes things confusing. Even after you've decided, yes, I need an app, I need a custom website, I need a booking system that does this, again, start with the bare minimum requirements. So just to give you an extreme version of this, my co-founder, who had built a lot of stuff with like tens of millions of users in the B2C market, and he's also our CTO, when we built the first version of it. And for us, we're a mobile app, right? We're a mobile app, integrates with your phone book, et cetera. It took us over a year before we even started development on the mobile app. We had hundreds of customers paying us every month before we even started development. And both of us are technical. So you can push that back. And the app is the product. There's no offline or anything business that we have. The app is the product. But we just did a really simple, crappy web version. And that got us our first 100, 150 customers.
Yeah, I love
but
that.
When we went to the app, it was so embarrassing, but it definitely worked. We cut so many corners that I just felt so embarrassed. For example, we're an app to help you manage your leads and clients. So you can add clients, obviously. We did not have edit client nor delete client. And just to prove a point, my co-founder and CTO said, you know what? I said, look, this is an issue. You can add clients, you can add contacts, but you can't edit them. This is stupid. Can we just add this in? I know it's going to take an hour. I'll do it myself. And he says, no, I don't think people need it right now. Like, they'll need it eventually, but how about this? The moment someone asks for it, the moment someone asks to edit a contact, I will build it and release it within an hour. And I was like, okay, this is a stupid experiment. We're just going to get hammered tomorrow. We're a contact app. Like, how can you not edit contacts in a contact app?
Right.
This is a stupid experiment, but fine. I'll humor you. Tomorrow, so 10 people are going to ask, you're going to be right. the citizen, and you're going to have to build it. It took us 6 months.
Yeah.
It took 6 months of the app being live before one person asked to edit the contact.
I love that.
In a contact app.
I love that.
And that is such basic functionality. You could obviously imagine if there's so many other things. Oh, I'm going to call Facebook and LinkedIn and pull in your news feeds, blah, 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 blah. But we just started so simple.
Right.
And that allowed us to move really fast.
I love that. That is such a great tip. People will probably want to listen to this interview more than once to get all the nuggets out of it. And I want to ask, because I also want to be respectful of time, is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I would say maybe like struggles for like going international, going global. We started in Singapore for the first 18 months, and then we went self-serve, and then just we have customers now in 125 countries. They're doing over 1 million leads a week to our platforms. So there's stuff on that, but that's probably at the later stage. I think we focus a lot more on the earlier stages. Happy to stay at the early stage, later stage.
I think we got to bring you back on for a follow-up, because you've got lots of good stuff. Great story. If people want to check out the app, if they want to contact you, what are the best ways for them to get in touch?
Sure. So we have a website, www.privyr.com, P-R-I-V-Y-R. And that will get you started. You can also just Google us or go to YouTube, watch some videos. We have live chat there. I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to message me anytime.
Okay, so check out privyr.com. That is privyr.com. Go check out the app, download it. You can do the trial if you want. And also go look up Aaron Lim, A-R-O-N-L-I-M. We've got the right guy if he's in Singapore and went to Berkeley and, of course, is working with PRIVYR, Privyr. Aaron, thank you so much. This has been a breath of fresh air. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you for coming and sharing with us. Knowing you have your own customers, your own clients, your own direct reports, your own family. Thank you for coming and sharing with me and mine so we can all do a little bit better.
Thanks so much for having me, Daryl. Hope it was helpful for you and your community.